right, Steve. Hey, how you doing today? What do you have on your desk?
I'm going pretty good here. We had a small animal GP contract over here in New Jersey, corporate agreement, and I have a mixed animal veterinarian in rural Idaho, both new grads. So very interesting, kind of two very different things, and kind of helping them out along the road in negotiation. What about you?
Two different, like different parts of the country, different types of practice, just as far as you can get.
It was an interesting dichotomy.
Sounds like it. Oh, let's see. So in about an hour, I'll be talking to a surgeon who's also a medical director. That's going to be very interesting. I've got a cardiologist that we're just finishing up with, a dentist up in New York that we're just finishing up with, a veterinary dentist. And then let's see, we have oh, and then just several partnership issues going on. So it's like a day of negotiation. That's really what we need to talk about today. And especially with you with the new grads, with me dealing with more of the specialist route. Man, we've had a lot of contracts in the last 6 months, 8 months or so. My name is Lance Rosa. I'm a veterinarian and attorney. On the line with me is Steve Kellner. Steve's a paralegal who has been looking at contracts now for what, Steve? More than 20 years. I hate to say this.
21 years now.
21 years of looking at veterinary contracts, helping veterinarians through their negotiation process. Steve worked for another gentleman by the name of Jim Wilson, the nation's second DVM JD, for a number of years. And then Steve and I started working together, what, 7 or 8 years ago now, something like that. I forget what it was, but between the two of us, we see probably 1,000 contracts a year, at least three a day, wouldn't you say, Steve?
Yeah, at least three a day, and yep, Dr. Wilson was definitely my mentor through all of this. I actually got a phone call today on my cell phone. Somebody was looking for him, and I was like, he's not quite retired yet, so you can try to reach him over here.
You can reach him over there. Well, Jim's the guy that literally wrote the book on veterinary contract law. So it's pretty rare that you get to say that. He wrote the book on. No, he literally wrote the book
Literally.
on. Well, hey, Steve, what are some of the themes that you see when you're working with someone, through the negotiation process? I mean, think about that process for a little bit, from going out and interviewing and then going and checking out the practice and hanging out at the practice, and then here comes this offer letter. What's your advice to, a veterinarian or even a veterinary student when they get that offer letter?
Well, it's interesting. They get the offer letter. They're very excited. They're coming out of school. Somebody's offering them a good amount of money to do what they've spent a whole lot of years trying to get to where they're able to do that. And the initial reaction of most of them is, let me sign this thing as quickly as possible
Ooh, ooh.
and get it right back to them, which.
Yeah, sign the offer letter. What are your thoughts on that?
My first thought is, let's slow down. Let's
Yeah.
slow down a second. The offer letter is not going to contain all of the details that we want to see. It's going to give us the bare minimum, the compensation, the benefits in a very short fashion. We'd much rather see the whole employment contract and any other materials we can possibly get our hands on. Why do we want to see that, Lance?
Oh, there's, I mean, so here's my thoughts is, if it takes 7 or 8 pages to write an entire veterinary contract, if it takes 20 or 30 pages to describe the health insurance plan and the, 401k and, maybe 40 pages for the employee handbook, how can you take everything about this job and condense it down to one page without leaving a lot of stuff off? And I think we need to probably back up a step too. Basically, every job in veterinary medicine at this point is using an offer letter. I mean, is that what you're seeing as well? I would say 98 to 99% of the jobs, that we see first comes an offer letter with a signature block on the bottom of them. Hey, sign this offer letter. Then, hey, we'll send you over the contract and the other details about the job. But what Steve and I are saying here is we have to pump the brakes and get all the information about the job. Don't sign that offer letter until you know everything that you need to know about the job. It is unfortunately too common for us to see to start working with someone through the negotiation process and they send us a signed offer letter. Well, we can't really negotiate from that. We've locked in the terms of the signing bonus and the salary and the production percentage and the days off and you know all of these other details that we're locked. We can't really move on that. And there's a really important thing that we see a lot of jobs and a lot of hiring practices do, and they put a lot of pressure on that veterinarian, right, Steve? You know, they'll say stuff like, sign this offer letter, and then we'll go ahead and send everything else. The other one that I commonly hear is, hey, sign this offer letter. It's not a legally binding document. Don't worry about it. It just helps you get to the next step. What are your thoughts on that, Steve?
I have many people that I'm consulting with that say, hey, I signed the offer letter, but it's okay, it's non-binding. And then I have to say, well, it's non-binding to the point where it doesn't mean you have to start working there, but you have now signed an agreement to terms, and the other side is expecting that you're agreeable to all the things listed here. And it's not going to be the greatest look if we go back later and say, you know, remember that thing that we signed? Turns out we want to negotiate on some of those items,
Yeah,
right?
we want to change that thing. Yeah,
Yeah.
so the you know, my exact thoughts are that offer letter may not be legally binding, but it's certainly psychologically binding. You know, it's a handshake agreement that we really can't back up on our word, you know, on that. There's not going to be any lawsuits over the offer letter. And I mean, so the recruiters and you know the other folks, they are correct. I mean, it is a non-legally binding document, but you're bound to the things, you know, there. So, you know, when you are working with someone and they do say, hey, I've got to sign this offer letter so I can get the contract, I can get the, you know, the other details, what's your advice to them?
Yeah, again, it's slow down. Let's get the agreement now and any other documents we might want to look at now. But ideally, let's start and get the agreement now. You know, be gracious. The employer just offered you a whole lot of money to do what you want to do. Hey, I'm really grateful to have received this offer of employment, but you know, it seems fairly sparse, and I was wondering if you could give me the entire employment agreement so I can just look at everything all at once. Is
Yeah,
that what you're saying?
great statement. You know, I mean, and yeah, I think we really should talk in, you know, concrete words. What are exact statements that veterinarian should say to that, you know, practice owner, medical director, regional medical director, recruiter, you know, whoever it is that they are negotiating with, you know, hey, you know, my statement is I've got questions. You know, this offer letter is just not as, you know, detailed. What does this mean? What does that mean? You know, where do I go to find the answers on the health insurance and who pays what percentage, the match on the 401k? When does the 401k become, you know, when do I come be, you know, become eligible for it? What is the vesting on the 401k? These details are insanely important. I have questions. Where do I go to find? Oh, well, we can send you the 401k plan. Okay, great. You know, where's the details on the restrictive covenants, like you know, non-compete? You know, oh, what's in the contract? Well, can I see the contract before I move forward? And so, you know, it's not a function of demanding or, you know, being obstinate about this thing. It's just a function of being nice and, hey, I've got questions and, you know, and they should provide answers, you know, if they want to sign you to the job. You know, so I think Steve, our bottom line here is, you know, don't sign that offer letter until you're absolutely ready to take that job.
And you know, you're gonna in the offer letter, you're gonna see, let's just say, 22% production. But is that paid monthly? Is it quarterly? Is it something else that we want to negotiate down to quarterly or monthly? What
Well,
is and isn't included in production?
yeah.
You know, is there negative accrual? We don't know.
You opened a huge can of worms by saying the word production, you know, which 85 or 90% of the contracts that we see, you know, have production. I think we could have an entire podcast just on production. We could talk for 45, you know, minutes just on the concept of production. But you're right. There's never enough details in that offer letter about, you know, about things like production and all those details are really only found in the contract itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened? What do you do when someone is when the person on the other side, the hiring practice, is really kind of obstinate and doesn't want to give the contract? Hey, you have to sign this. We can't move on to the next step. What is your what's your kind of next move there?
If we get to an absolute stopping point and the associate still wants to proceed and take the position and negotiate, the only thing I think you can do at that point, or the best thing you can do at that point, is to tell the associate, look, if they're going to gatekeep the agreement behind the offer letter, we need to negotiate every single thing and only every single thing that we're seeing here. It leads to a more protracted process, because then you negotiate on everything in the offer letter, sign it, they get the agreement, and now we have to negotiate again on the things that were not in the offer letter, right?
Yeah, it's they kind of doubled up the process. And so, in my perfect world, the offer letter never gets signed. So the offer letter is thrown out there on email. Hey, check this out. Hey, ask some questions. Hey, can I see the whole contract? Can I see all the other stuff? The offer letter just floats off into space. And then, as you're saying, Steve, we start to negotiate the actual contract itself, and the offer letter just goes away. It may never get signed, because when we actually go to accept the job, we're going to sign the contract, itself. And that really brings me to a point, Steve. You said something that kind of reminds me of something, and this is, my old mantra: everything is negotiable. So a lot of practices that we work with, the big practices that have thousands of veterinarians, they say, this is a boilerplate document. This is everyone else has this. This is our process. We don't give the contract until the offer letter is signed. Well, what's your thoughts on that, Steve? How often does that actually play out?
Yeah, no, I mean, usually we can get the full agreement if we ask them enough, and everything is always up for negotiation unless the associate is getting gets the contract, doesn't read it, doesn't look at it, signs it. And that was the case with well, that was the case of a friend of the client that I was speaking to from New Jersey. Same company, same contract. They got the contract and just signed it away.
Yeah, well, I mean that really kind of drives home the point, about everything's negotiable. So, I'm taking a wild guess here, Steve, but probably 80% of the veterinarians out there don't negotiate their contract at all.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that one, Lance.
I mean, we don't really know, because we don't really work with those folks, but they just sign the first thing that hits the table in front of them. Well, if you're a hiring, practice, if you're hiring veterinarians, it behooves you to come in and lowball and undercut the process, because there's an 80% chance that you could save yourself, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 if this veterinarian does not push back. And so that's why, I don't know, Steve. I mean, we can go through some of these concession patterns, but I see changes of $30,000 and $40,000 in each of these contracts once we begin to negotiate, once we begin to ask some details, once we begin to, lean on certain things. And, if you start getting into the specialty world, surgeons and cardiologists and dentists, all on my desk for this afternoon, we'll see changes of 40, 50, $60,000 from that initial offer. So the job market's white hot. Every single thing is negotiable, no matter how much the practice says, we don't negotiate this, there's no way to change this, et cetera, et cetera. Steve, I can probably think of two or three in the last 6 months that did not send the contract, until the offer letter was signed. I mean, we're talking, what do you think, 500 or 600 contract reviews, negotiations. It is phenomenally rare that they won't send it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, completely rare that they won't end up sending it in the end. You know, if you if and one of the big things about everything is negotiable. One of the first things I ask people, mainly regarding the compensation section, what I want to know is, was this their first offer? Because if the answer is yes, then the door is wide open to ask the question. And a lot of thing, one thing that I think people really need to remember is the answer to your question is no if you don't ask it.
Yeah,
And
that's
nobody's
exactly
going
right.
to turn you away for asking a question.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, let's think back to, to all the contract reviews that we've done, Steve, all the negotiations, and we push pretty hard, right? I mean, we push people to their absolute limit. Like, it's very common that I'll work with a veterinarian, and they'll say, "Are you sure that we got the best deal that we could possibly get?" And I mean, there is crying and wringing of hands. On the other side, I know that we pushed as hard as we possibly can. So we push hard. And Steve, how many times can you think of that the offer, the job actually got pulled? Like, hey, we don't want to hire you anymore because you negotiated. What do
One,
you one?
well, two, but the second one, once a regional manager got involved, the offer was put back on the table.
I remember that, Steve, that it was like, oh my gosh, we made a huge mistake. We want to hire you after all.
And it turns out we do want to hire you.
I remember you calling me and saying, hey, we had number two of them, two did not ultimately take the job. Two of the, two practices backed out of all time. And then you call me back like 24 hours later and you're like, no, that was a mistake. They ended up very sorry for
Yeah,
that mistake.
they went right up the associate, jumped over the person they were dealing with to the regional manager. The regional manager stepped in, and the offer was put back on the table.
Offer was put back on the table. So, here's how I think about that, Steve. So, have you ever gone skydiving before?
No.
No, I haven't either. I would never jump out of a good plane. But let's just say hypothetically that there's a 1 in 5,000 chance that the chute doesn't open. I don't know what the odds are when you go skydiving. Maybe it's 1 in 5,000, maybe it's 1 in 10,000. But the point is, we have to tell our clients, just trust us. The chute is gonna open. We're gonna push hard. We're going to ask for what you need. They're not gonna pull the job out from under you. And in the 1 in 5,000 chance that they actually do, I remember calling that person, that ultimately lost out on that job. And I remember the conversation, and it was very much, hey, you did yourself a favor. You know that this is not a good practice to work for. And she was like, absolutely. I'm so glad that they pulled that job because I would have found out 4 months, 6 months, 8 months down the road that it's not a good practice, not a good culture to work in.
Yeah, and I mean people come in and they're like, why, should I negotiate? Why should I negotiate? Negotiation is not a worthwhile thing for me to proceed. I just want to take the job as is. And what disservice do you feel like they're doing to themselves there, Lance?
Yeah, as far as not negotiating.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's no doubt that money's going to be left on the table. There's no doubt that PTO days are going to be left on the table. There's no doubt that the little things, Steve, I mean, the things that don't make a lot of difference money-wise, but having your CE days paid off, having a good, healthy CE allowance, and so you can go to that conference that you want, that you can take your spouse along, that you can, that you get the CE. Well, it may be just $2,000 or $3,000 in difference, but when that actually happens, that's a big deal. And for me, really, Steve, I think I think a lot more about jobs than about money, and my mind really goes to the wellness situation and let's just call it a crisis in veterinary medicine, honestly. You and I spend a lot of time, thinking and talking about, hey, this veterinarian got this kind of, we got, $30,000 or $25,000. And that's great. We all have to live off of money and money is important. But sometimes we need to stop and think, what's actually going on in that person's life? They're going to be in that practice for 8, 10, 12 hours a day. This is going to be years of their life, that's tied up in that practice. And it's of no consequence that the turnover rate in veterinary medicine is so high. I've seen some statistics that say the turnover rate, is in the 50 to 60% range. People take a job and 12 to 18 months later, they're looking for another job and they're looking for another job. And I think about, and we take these calls every day, Steve, right? Of people that are looking to change jobs that, hey, I've got to put in notice, they're in a bad spot. So, my thought is always, if that person goes through the negotiation process and they think about and they push that practice and they, really make sure that it's the best practice for them, then it's very likely that they're not going to have to quit in 6, 8, 12, 18 months, right? They have a good long-term home. They don't have to put themselves through that wellness, situation. And I don't know if I've shared this with you, Steve, but I really hate I really hate sharing like really bad, facts. But you probably see the Merck Wellness study, but in that thing, they're talking about like 16, 17% of new grads are experiencing serious psychological distress. We're talking 1 in 6, basically. And it's of no consequence that, hey, the turnover rate's really high, serious psychological distress is really high. It's because we landed in the wrong job many times. Not every time, but many times. And so if we can really dive into that negotiation process, really make sure that we have the right practice, then we're much more likely to be happy and well and successful in veterinary medicine. And see, this is where the compensation comes in. The compensation is just a secondary piece, right? It's everything else falls into place and I'm well compensated. That's what I'm really looking for.
And to the point of like getting as much information as you can to prepare yourself for the future, for your wellness, there's other things you want to get aside from the full employment agreement. Like, if you're electing medical insurance through the employer that the employer offers, how much do they cover? What are my coverage options? What does that look like? Am I covering spouses? Am I covering my whole family? Do they have an HSA? What do I get? And the contracts are going to tell you the bare minimum. They're going to say employee is eligible for employer's benefit programs as provided from time to time. Tells you nothing.
I remember I just had one a week ago or 2 weeks ago where the veterinarian really was dialed into, what was the deductible on the health insurance plan, what kind of out-of-pocket expenses were going to be expected, what were the maxes, and she did all of her homework on that, and really understood, hey, this insurance plan of this employer is way worse than the other employer. I'm going to be out several thousand dollars per year. And here's what was going on, Steve, is she was contemplating starting a family, so she was looking at maternity leave. She was looking at what's it going to cost, when we meet our deductible and we, start to talk about maxes, through OBGYN visits and, in the hospital and getting the baby out of the hospital and all of that stuff. And so she said, hey, I'm going to be out 4 or 5,000 extra dollars, and so on that one, Steve, we actually came up with something pretty creative. I didn't tell you about this, but we started an HSA for that veterinarian. So the practice was going to fund an HSA because of the difference in the deductible. And then also they provided a stipend for, hey, what we knew was going to be the difference in the co-pays and all of that stuff. And so the practice made it right. They wanted to get the right health insurance plan, but here's the key point. She would not known of any of that if she didn't do her homework. If she didn't dig through that plan and really look and really understand the differences in the insurance, she would have been out, multiples of thousands of dollars because of that job switch.
And there's so many people that are not doing that level of due diligence. And it's important. It's important. It could make the difference from you deciding, hey, this job might have a little less compensation, but the wellness components, the PTO, the thing, other outside things that I'm being provided that I want, maybe they're going to pay for an extra CE certification outside the allowance. Things that are more softer than just hard compensation may lead you to move in that direction. And that's something that the associate really needs to consider. I kind of say that negotiating your employment contract is a big exercise in know yourself.
No, yeah. Well, that's the first thing that they teach in negotiation training, is you got to know what you want before you can tell the other side what you want, and you definitely can't expect the other side to guess what you want. And so, the first step is to stop and sit and think, what are my interests? What are the things that are super important to me? and literally write them down on a piece of paper, you know, and rank them and say, well, one, two, three, four, these are the things that I need. Go into the negotiation knowing I've got to meet these goals. Don't ever expect the other side to read your mind. Just not going to happen. And that's the that is the and that is the basis of negotiation, way more than than just asking for more money. And I, you know, and you know this, Steve, but the thing, you know, that I was trained to negotiate in is relationship-based negotiation. And that's really what we're talking about here is, you know, what are the soft things? What are the things that I can do well for the practice? What are the things that we can align our goals on? You know, before we get to the hard stuff, like, you know, talking about salary and days off and restrictive covenant, you know, non-compete radius, you know, those things, you know, we have diametrically opposed or opposite interests.
Yeah, we're looking for the complementary interests. And even in any question you ask, even if you're asking for something for yourself, you can always frame it in a complementary fashion. I mean, we're talking about asking for all of the documents. Well, one of the things I'd like people to get a hold of is the employee handbook. And, you know, how are you going to ask for the employee handbook? Well, you could say, hey, can I see the employee handbook because I want to see it. And okay, you might get it, you might not. But if you ask it in a fashion of, you know, hey, I'd really like to see what the policies and procedures are at the hospital. I want to make sure when I arrive that I can focus on good medicine, bonding with your clients, learning the staff, and not worrying about did I hit the dress code right today.
Yeah.
And that bill that makes that the employer's hearing that and they're saying, oh wow, they're really focused on this other stuff. Of course, here, have the employee handbook, get ready. We want you to come in and work well with our practice. Whatever we can do to make that happen is a complimentary interest.
Yeah, that's yeah, you nailed it. That's exactly what you just described is, you know, hey, it behooves me. It's in my interest to be, you know, ready to go on day one. But it also behooves the practice for you to be ready to go on day one. Interest aligned. All right. So that's a relationship building, you know, exercise. You know, but there's also other reasons to see the employee handbook as well. And, you know, you know, we spend a lot of time talking and thinking about parental leave as well. And it always concerns me. I had one just in the last, you know, few days where the veterinarian again was contemplating, you know, maternity leave, but she was so scared. And I don't blame her. To ask what the maternity leave policy was, you know, because she knew if she asked, then it's going to be like, well, what, are you planning on having a baby? You know, it opens the door to discrimination. You know, and the practice is like, well, she's going to be out for 12 weeks, you know, this year. So it's going to be harder to get that extra signing bonus or that extra salary. And that's exactly what we did, Steve, is to say, you know, hey, can we get a copy of the employee handbook? You know, just to do our due diligence, to check everything out, make sure that we're complying with all the rules and regulations of the practice. But our eyes went straight to that maternity leave policy, that parental leave policy, to understand what is the policy of the practice before she accepted the job. And she did not have to open the door to discrimination to talk about maternity leave. It's a problem in our country that we still worry, you know, about discrimination on parental leave and maternity leave, but it's a very unfortunate fact that we do. So that's a good end around on getting that policy and understanding it before you have to ask those words.
Yeah, I mean, and it's the leave policies. I mean, think about, you know, hey, I don't want to go into a negotiation and say, hey, I'm a little bit disabled. What kind of accommodations can you make for me?
Yeah.
If they have another client, I don't want them saying, hey, maybe we should hire the not disabled person. I want everybody on an even playing field in that regard. They're not allowed to ask me if I'm disabled. They're not allowed to ask me if I'm starting a family.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah,
so
those are illegal questions, but people still ask them every day. And they still unfortunately base, you know, base discrimination on it.
yeah, it's
Yeah.
unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but then you know, we get the employee handbook, we look at the leave policies. We also look and see if there's any other benefits that aren't listed in the agreement, you know, softer, very soft things like uniform allowance, what's the hospital's personal pet care plan? You're not going to find these things in the contract. A
Yeah.
lot of the handbook is going to be geared towards the lay staff, but there are very important sections that everybody should be looking at.
Yeah, and it really goes, you know, what I see is that, you know, those corporate practices, like you said earlier, those big group corporate practices, they have that line in there that says the health insurance is, per company policy. The 401k is per company policy, and so you've got to go get that other document to really understand, what that thing is. And we know what they're doing there, right? That allows them to change those policies from time to time, as they need to. And that does bother some of my clients that they don't, they want to lock in that health insurance plan. They want to lock in that benefit, whatever else it is. If it's in this other document, it can be changed, but what I tell them is there's a really good business reason why practices don't change their benefits plan. They know if they change that benefit plan, they're going to lose people. It's if they take away benefits, it may not be for a legal reason that they can get in trouble, but it's a business reason why they avoid doing it.
Yeah, they're not going to come in and say, "Hey, guess what? As of today, we're not providing health insurance any longer. That's not going to be a benefits program that we provide." It
Yeah.
would crater their level of employment in immediate.
Yeah, it would be a very, very bad business move, on their part. Yeah, and I mean, hey, I said the corporate word there, Steve. I think that we really need to point out that there's a huge myth out there. In fact, we need to talk about some myths, but there's a huge myth out there that corporates don't negotiate. And I mean, I know what you're seeing. I mean, I see the biggest changes from negotiating with corporates. We ask once or twice and see an extra, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 put onto the offer. The signing bonus, another $10,000 or $20,000, $30,000 on the signing bonus just for asking on the corporate side. And so, I mean, I should get a Mythbusters hat and put the Mythbusters hat on every time I see, say, hear somebody say, well, the corporate doesn't negotiate. They said everybody's like this. It's like, absolutely not. That's a huge myth. They negotiate heavily. In fact, they negotiate. They'll reach into their pockets much faster and much easier than those private, independently owned practices. And I have to say it, Steve, I think the corporates are the ones that propagate that myth that they don't negotiate.
I absolutely agree. I mean, the independently owned practices, I do, there's clearly some negotiation there, but you tend to do a little more educating
Yeah.
in those scenarios than you do when you're negotiating with a corporate recruiter who,
Yeah.
I'll be frank, that I don't have as much of a problem asking more pointed questions to.
Yeah, educate that independently owned practice on, what is the market? What are other practices doing? And I think that really is a, and we could talk for another 45 minutes on just the negotiation itself, but a really big driver is what's the market? What's common? What's industry standard? What are other practices doing? And that really helps, that statement of fact really helps, to get what you want. And that changes the conversation from, I want more PTO. I need more PTO. I want more CE. Well, we don't care what you want. We don't care what you think. We don't care. Okay, if you say, hey, the market for, other veterinarians are getting 3 days of paid CE leave. Oh, okay. Well, that's a statement of fact. It's hard to argue with the market. It's hard to argue with facts.
And if you couple that with, a statement like, "Hey, work-life balance is really important to me. I want to make sure I maintain my wellness. So when I do take PTO, I'm coming back to the practice recharged, ready to go, and ready to kind of get back at it." Put those things together, and you've got a winning argument.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, I hate to cut this short, but I've got to talk to a surgeon here, a veterinary surgeon, to help negotiate her contract. But
Absolutely. I just saw an email come in, and I've got somebody with that has drafted up their negotiation points. I think I'm going to have to get a bell, so every time we hit on a topic that's going to be good for another episode, we'll ring
yeah,
that bell.
we need to be
We're not going to
writing
be
this
able to cover
down.
anything in this
Yeah.
in
Well,
a short amount of time frame every time.
We'll forget it, but I think we should summarize. All right. So one myth, corporates definitely negotiate. The myth is, corporates don't negotiate. So we've got to bust that myth. The second really big point that we talked about was, is you don't have to sign your offer letter before you see the contract. So The myth is well, you got to sign the offer letter before you can move on to the next step of the contract. Huge myth, not true. Third myth is negotiation isn't worthwhile. What, they're just going to tell me no? Well, absolutely not. It's worth 20, 30, 40, $50,000, and also finding the right job, the good job, that veterinary needs. And lastly, we didn't really talk about as much. We'll have a whole episode of, about this, but a lot of veterinarians think of negotiation as a very painful experience. And I think that they're probably thinking about haggling, Steve. If you go down to the used car lot and you haggle over the price of a used car, that's not negotiation in the sense that we're talking relationship-based negotiation. That is a haggling, right? And so if you move the concept over to, you move the thought process over to a relationship-based negotiation and just having a conversation where everybody's interest gets in line, much less painful process. Hey, but it was good visiting today, Steve. We brought up you brought up some good points there. So I think we need to go back to work, honestly.
Yep, let's get back at it and we'll see y'all next time.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.